for a closer look. I'm Dennis O'Hare.
And I'm Rose Scott. Dennis, Atlanta's nonprofit leadership is going through some changes with the different organizations. With recent retirement announcements by executives at CARE, we had Dr. Helene Galen here, the Atlanta Community Food Bank, the CDC Foundation, and Voices for Georgia's Children, to name a few. Well, the Latin American Association will also see the retirement of its executive director this year.
Jeffrey Tapia has been in leadership roles at the Latin American Association for 14 years, serving for the last three of those as its top executive. Of course, immigration reform has been a pressing issue both at the state and national level during those years. Jeffrey Tapia joins us in the studio. Welcome. Good to have you.
Welcome.
Thank you. Great to be here.
We've spoken before at your office, but I think this is your first time in the studio. Good to have you.
It is. Thank you.
As we speak, the legal battle over President Obama's executive actions on immigration is still going on. A federal court in Texas temporarily blocked implementation of the president's order. An appeals court agreed with that. Now, the order would have granted temporary legal status to millions of immigrants, would have delayed deportations for many of them. So at the association, are you now seeing people kind of caught in the middle of all this? And what's their status right now?
Dennis, we are seeing people every day caught in this limbo as a result of the legal embattlement with the executive order. And what we believe at the Latin American Association is that comprehensive immigration reform is really the direction the nation needs to take. Congress must take action on that. I think that the nation is in agreement that our immigration system, laws, and policies are terribly outdated and don't serve the needs of the country, economically, socially, and otherwise. And this last, this legal battle over the administration's executive order, I believe, is more about how things were done. And there is true bipartisan agreement that the nation's immigration system needs to be reformed.
So are you saying, and we should note here that Georgia is one of the states that had challenged the president's executive actions, are you saying, though, that even though you might agree with what his intent was, that really the only way to fix this and end the limbo that you're seeing among your clients is for Congress to enact comprehensive immigration reform, and the president should probably have even waited for that?
The executive order really was an attempt to prevent families from being separated through deportation, but it is a temporary measure. It does not provide any permanence or true legal status, and only comprehensive immigration reform is going to provide that.
Ms. Tapia, has the organization been able to have any type of dialogue or conversation with Governor Deal or Attorney General Sam Olens?
We have met on several occasions with Governor Deal, and in particular, we have talked with him about the young people, the children. And the Governor Deal truly believes, I think, in helping the children. We talked about the DACA recipients, deferred action recipients, and their ability or their lack of ability really to get a good education here. They are being charged out-of-state tuition, and in some cases, international tuition, which really prevents them from getting a college education. And he was not aware of all of those facts, and I think really felt some concern about that barrier to education. We also talked with him about the unaccompanied minors at the border. We are serving those at the Latin American Association through immigration legal services, and he was also unaware of a lot of those circumstances surrounding those children, and really understood after our discussion that it is that there's really a need to protect those children.
And in speaking of those children, there's been such a backlog in their cases and even trying to get the proper immigration attorneys to represent them. How has your organization been able to help sort of help them sift through that process? Because you really need to have an immigration attorney somewhere in there, and also others to be an advocate for those undocumented children.
That's right, Rose. Our laws require these children to be seen by an immigration attorney to discern whether or not they're eligible for protection here. But if you go before an immigration judge without an attorney, especially a child and a child with no English language proficiency, your outcomes will not be favorable. The Latin American Association has been providing for many years now this legal representation for these children to help them go before the immigration judge, those with cases.
And when it comes to the results, then, these again are the unaccompanied children who've come from Central America. Have we had a chance to put together any numbers about how many of these children end up being deported or how many of them are still in the process? Where do we stand with that?
I don't know that we know the full numbers in Georgia. Many of them have, we know that there are over 1,500, those that we're aware of that. We have had hundreds come to us seeking assistance. I don't know the full numbers. We hear from certain school districts saying that they've received 35, for example, or some small number, but we don't know the full numbers.
Have you been able to work out any sort of state assistance, either directly to these young people or to the localities where they end up? Because you have school districts that suddenly are having to work with unaccompanied young people who've come from pretty horrifying circumstances in some cases, many of whom not only don't speak English, but don't speak Spanish. They speak the language of the native areas where they came from. So have we been able to get help for the local governments who have to take in these kids?
Well, the schools by law must provide education, a public education, to children who are school age. And the schools have readily taken in these children. They have, in most cases, they already have resources in place for children who are not proficient in English. I know that there are some children who don't speak Spanish if they're from Guatemala. Sometimes they speak other dialects, and that's been a challenge for some of the schools.
Mm-hmm. So is there help for them, I guess, is the question. Help for the locals, because they find themselves caught when they run into a situation like that.
Schools receive funding for their students and for the English as a second language instruction.
We're speaking with Jeffrey Tapia. She's the outgoing executive director of the Latin American Association. And I want to get into some other resources and assistance that you all provide. We've seen the Latin American Association. I think often people think, well, what exactly do you all do? Do you just focus on just immigration issues? But what other services do you offer to the community?
Well, the purpose of the Latin American Association is really to provide the tools and resources and information that immigrant families, Latin American immigrant families, need in order to adapt, integrate, and thrive. And as I mentioned, we have immigration legal services. We have five top-notch immigration legal attorneys. We have youth programs for youth as well as their in middle and high school, as well as their parents, so that the parents can learn how to support their child's education. We have programs for families so that we can assist them if they are in a crisis or need to identify resources or information so that they can continue their quest to get ahead and take care of their families. We have employment services, including a new program for women, the Latinas Economic Empowerment Program, in which we're helping women prepare for the workplace and also to open their own business.
What about health care? Because I know it's been a major issue for everyone, let's be honest, but then also for those who are coming to this country for the first time and need immediate health care. What services do you all provide?
Well, the Latin American Association has always been a meeting place for new immigrants and a source of information and resources. We have provided referrals and information to healthcare and mental health. There's a tremendous need for that. We host many support groups for different health issues, cancer, arthritis, and other diabetes, lupus on our site. We also have a navigator who is there full-time to help individuals and families understand what the affordable health care is and means and how to access it.
If the Supreme Court were to throw out key portions of the Affordable Care Act, what would be the effect on some of the clients you see?
Well, first let me say that the Latino population in Georgia is the largest uninsured population in Georgia. We already have a tremendous problem there. And that's obviously if we want good outcomes for the region. We want good outcomes for every individual, men, women, and children. So that would be, I'm sure it would have an impact, but we already have a serious challenge for the uninsured.
Let's turn for just a second to something that you mentioned just a moment ago, which was the in-state tuition versus out-of-state tuition for young people who were brought here as children. Now, the state Supreme Court has just agreed to hear oral arguments in a case challenging that Board of Regents policy. Were you involved in that, number one, and do you think that perhaps the state will be able to reach some sort of settlement, since you said Governor Deal is also concerned, at least, about it?
The state, I believe that the state is going to come to the conclusion that we need to be allowing these young people, these DACA recipients, to enter all of Georgia's public colleges and to be able to have access to in-state tuition. By federal definition, DACA recipients are lawfully present, and therefore Georgia should be following the federal definition, and there would be no reason to bar them from in-state tuition or access to those colleges.
You all are obviously a nonprofit organization, so you're supposed to stay out of sort of all the public policy and the political back and forth. But I'm curious as to what sort of outreach you're doing just to get people to register to vote. We keep hearing that the Republican Party is trying to increase its Latino voter turnout, and the Democrats may say the same thing. But do you all have any resources just to sort of explain how this process works and get people registered, those who are eligible to register to vote?
The work that we're doing really, I think, is preparing many individuals for citizenship, at which point they will be able to vote. We have many U.S. citizens seeking services with us. We help them learn what opportunities there are for them for civic engagement. We do citizenship applications for young people and for adults, preparing them to be able to vote.
So what issues then, when other than obviously the immigration issues, what are some of the other pressing issues that the Latino community here in the Atlanta area is really sort of focusing on that you all maybe need to do more of a better job, or you need to increase in awareness about, or just even get people more engaged in?
Truly, the need for comprehensive immigration reform is the biggest need and underlies all the barriers that the community faces to being truly self-sufficient. We see cases of wage theft every day. We see individuals coming in with complaints about inadequate and dangerous housing situation. I believe that those are directly related to the lack of immigration reform.
Isn't also part of the problem, we hear this critique often, that many folks who are here, either legally or illegally, don't learn English quickly enough. And if they did, they'd be able to get adult education, for instance, or be able to catch things like wage theft or tell when they're being cheated. Are more of the association's clients learning English?
Immigrants across Atlanta, across Georgia, and across the nation are learning English every single day. They're doing it on the streets, they're doing it in their homes, they're doing it on their work site, they're doing it in formal classes, they're doing it with friends and families. Learning a language as another language as an adult is extremely difficult. But I challenge anyone, they are definitely learning English at all times. There's a big difference between conversational English and academic English. And so for those of you who have tried to learn Spanish, I'm sure you will agree that you can order your meal, but you may not be able to take a class mm-hmm. in English.
Mm-hmm. So in terms of what you offer, how critical a component is that?
English is a very critical component. We have English language classes throughout the day offered, also in the evenings until 9 o'clock at night and all day Saturdays, so that people who are working whatever shift they have to work, they can still get to an English language class.
There have been obviously so many accounts of policing in minority communities, and obviously people tend to think of African Americans or the Latino community. What have you all been able to do in terms of sort of bridging that gap, bringing the dialogue, the conversation between the Latino community and authorities?
We We have recently, in the past year or so, hired a director of advocacy, and a large part of his responsibilities, as well as mine and others who represent the Latin American Association, is to develop relationships with police departments, with the mayors, with elected officials, with the public in general, to help them understand what the needs and challenges are of the immigrant population. And we spend a lot of time doing that. And I think that we're very successful with that.
Because often we hear that if there is a crime that is committed against an immigrant, they are sort of fearful of the police for fear of all sorts of other issues to come up. So how do you deal with that and getting them to feel comfortable and have confidence in the authorities that they will serve their needs when there is a crime committed?
We see police departments across Atlanta, and in particular with the city of Atlanta, where we've been working with Mayor Reed on his Welcoming Atlanta initiative, working very hard to be accessible and have good relationships with diverse populations. And we're very pleased to see that and hope to see that really expand across the region.
On that subject, after in the time that you've been executive director and have been working at the Latin American Association even before that, there have been an effort in the legislature, at least over the years, to basically say to folks who are here illegally, you need to go back home. Have we seen over the years people starting to do that? In other words, are perhaps in your work at the association, are you seeing more people leaving than arriving?
There was a time a couple years ago when we had House Bill 87 where many families left. They went to other states. They went home to their home countries. I don't think we're seeing that now. And really, that is because our immigration population is a very complex population. We have families who have U.S. citizens as well as undocumented individuals in one family. You could have a 14-year-old who is a U.S. citizen and another sibling who is undocumented and a parent who may be documented and a parent who is a U.S. citizen. So it's very complex for these families to just pick up and go home. What is home? If you have lived here for 20 or 25 years, you have U.S. citizen children who are voting age, and you've established your home and your family's here, you're contributing to the community, you've bought a home or rented a home for 20 years, what is home?
So they are home. So when people leave, that was my next question, are they able to connect, or are you able to follow them even to know whether they're able to connect and reestablish once they return after having been here for years and doing all the things that you just talked about?
I've heard of some young people who have gone to their home country, even though they didn't live there for their entire life except for 3 to 5 years. And they have had an extremely difficult time being accepted in their home country and adapting to their new situation. They may not even speak the language.
With all the issues that we've been talking about today and all the your involvement with the association, so why retire now? And Why? What's the advice you have for your successor?
Well, yes, I'm part of the baby boomer directors of the nonprofits that you were referring to. I love my job, and I can't imagine a better job or a better organization to work with. Chokes me up. I love the LAA. I also have plans to spend time with my husband now. We've had kind of a commuting marriage, and we're looking forward to being together.
So what's your advice for the incoming executive director, if you could offer any?
Well, they're extremely fortunate to have such an amazing staff. Our staff is extraordinary. They are professional. They are passionate. There's nobody who knows more about the community, the Latino community, than they do. So they have a tremendous blessing with our staff. The Latin American Association is in a wonderful community, Atlanta, that has tremendous partners and support. They're going to have a wonderful, wonderful job ahead of them.
Jeffrey Tapia is the outgoing executive director of the Latin American Association. Thanks very much for being
with
us, and
in.
Best of luck.
Thank you so much.